Hello, this is Judy with the Decatur Herald and Review on this date, September 16, 2016. And we'll begin today by reading the cover story, Michael S. Yost, guilty on all four first-degree murder counts. Sullivan, as he emerged from the Moultrie County Courthouse after his conviction for first-degree murder Thursday afternoon, Michael J. Yost raised a middle finger to reporters while more than a dozen friends and family of the victims cheered the verdict from the street. One of the sheriff's deputies beside Yost grabbed his arm and pulled his shackled right hand down for the rest of the walk to a nearby squad car. The scene culminated a four-day bench trial where Circuit Court Judge Dan L. Flannel, Chief Judge of the Sixth Judicial Circuit, ruled that the prosecution had proven its case and found Yost, 42, guilty of all four counts of first-degree murder he was charged with in the March 4, 2015 stabbing death of ex-girlfriend Sherry Randall. Flannel set sentencing for October 21st. The Sullivan man faces a sentence of 20 years to natural life in prison. The judge cautioned a packed courtroom before issuing his verdict that he would not tolerate any outbursts or noisy displays of celebration. As a result, about 20 friends and relatives of Randall, who was 43 when she died, mostly refrained even from whispering until they reached the hall, where they embraced and spoke quietly, with many eyes bright with tears of relief. Terry Sanderfer, Randall's father, said the family had no immediate comment. Candy Kaufman of Downs was the closest relative of Yost to attend the trial, but said she was there for the Sanderfers and not her stepbrother. "He's been lying to us, so I'm here to find out the truth," she said. Also present this week to support the family were representative of Dove Inc.'s domestic violence program. Thursday's verdict came on a day when the defendant took the witness stand to testify that he remembers very little about what happened from the early evening hours of March 3, 2015, and waking up to HSHS St. Mary's Hospital in Decatur about 24 to 48 hours. His delivery was unemotional except for when he made his dislike plain for certain questions asked during cross-examination by Ed Parkinson with the Illinois State's Attorney's Appellate Prosecutor's Office. The judge also had to caution Yost to limit his remarks to answering the questions he was asked. The defendant said his only memories from his blackout period are fleeting, according to his testimony, and include standing and talking with Randall in her Sullivan apartment as she fried cheese at the kitchen stove, and then waking up sometime later on the floor between Randall's bed and dresser to find a knife stuck in his abdomen. Yost testified that he pulled the knife out, tried to stand, and collapsed again. He said he never saw Randall's body lying face up nearby, even though he was discovered on the bedroom floor by a neighbor about 11 a.m. March 4, 2015, naked and lying on his side, his left arm draped across her torso. Both people had multiple stab wounds. Kelly's Biggs, a forensic scientist for the Illinois State Police who was recalled to the stand by the prosecution, testified there were no signs of sexual assault by Randall's body. Also on Thursday, public defender Brad Raw produced an drug in Dr. Gregory Clark of Chicago Diabetes Experts to testify that on March 3, 2015, Yost, a type 2 diabetic, likely suffered from extremely low blood sugar, a condition that can cause memory loss and uncharacteristic behavior. In his closing argument, Ra also said investigators jumped to the conclusion they were dealing with an attempted murder-suicide in much the same way those in Macon County focused too long on a security guard at the Decatur Mobile Home Park where murder victim Sarah Creamer, 3, lived in 1995 before finally zeroing in on the uncle convicted of the crime in 2004. James L. Huff was sentenced to 50 years in prison in that case. Ross said key evidence was not tested. Many questions remain unanswered, and then that a letter to his Yost parents recovered from the defendant's waistband on April 7, 2015, stated that only Sherry and I could not have done this. State's attorney Jeremy Ritchie argued in this closing statement that Yost carried out his many threats to kill her by choosing a particular heinous method by stabbing her in such a way that her death was slow and painful. And he did it, the state's attorney said, after buying her drinks at a local bar the day before she died while deliberately moderating her own alcohol consumption. He had plans, Ritchie said. If he could not have her, he was going to make sure no one else would. Going on to another article entitled Sugar Getting Blame for Unhealthy Americans. Sugar won a PR battle in the early 1960s that Americans, and children in particular, are now wearing around their waist. With U.S. obesity rates among the highest in the world, the American Heart Association recently released new guidelines for children's sugar intake, fewer than 25 grams per day. That's in line with adult guidelines, less than 36 grams for men and 24 grams for women. In 1961, Ansel Keys' Seven Countries study, later found to be flawed, persuaded the AHA to issue guidelines targeting saturated fat. According to Time magazine, new research on Keys' data found that best correlated with heart disease was sugar, not saturated fat intake. And according to an Associated Press story in 1964, the group now known as Sugar Association internally discussed a campaign to address negative attitudes toward sugar. After studies began emerging linking sugar with heart disease, the following year the group proved Project 226, which entailed paying Harvard researchers today's equivalent of $48,900 for an article reviewing the scientific literature, supplying materials they wanted reviewed, and receiving drafts of the same article. The resulting article, published in 1967, concluded there was no doubt that reducing cholesterol and saturated fat was the only dietary intervention needed to prevent heart disease. The researchers overstated the consistency of the literature on fat and cholesterol while downplaying studies on sugar, according to the analysis. It was at that time foods high in carbohydrates and made to taste good by sugar replaced some of the foods in U.S. homes that were high in saturated fats. Sugary drinks and less active lifestyles have also contributed to an obesity rate that's up from 13% in 1962 to 35.7% in 2010, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. While scientists are still working to understand links between diet and heart disease, in recent years they have shifted the blame away from fat and toward sugar, according to New York University Professor of Nutrition Marion Nessel. A committee that advised the federal government on dietary guidelines said the available evidence shows no appreciable relationship between the dietary cholesterol and heart disease, although it still recommended limiting saturated fats. Sugar, though, has been directly directly linked to higher obesity rates, which led to more cases of diabetes, high blood pressure, and heart disease. And the health problems are occurring younger and younger, particularly diabetes, according to HSHS St. Mary's Hospital pediatrician Dr. Samir Patel. When you take in more undesirable calories, like from sugar, you gain weight, Patel said. Insulin needs to get to the target organ to help let sugar in, but when you have increased weight gain, it stops the insulin from getting in, and that causes diabetes. Now, with so many more obese children, we're seeing a lot more type 2 diabetes in kids. Crossing healthcare dietitian Alyssa Raha said cases of type 2 diabetes didn't exist 20 years ago, but now she sees it frequently. It's mind-blowing, and it's coming completely from diet and lack of activity, Raha said. What's scary is we know how to take care of someone who gets diabetes in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, and we know the cost as far as their health care goes, but we've never taken care of kids with diabetes before. What does that look like, cost-wise, over the long haul, and what are you going to feel like when you're 30? In addition to limiting the amount of added sugar for children 2 to 18 to less than 25 grams, the AHA's new guidelines said children 2 and younger should consume no added sugar. Dr. Miriam Voss, nutrition scientist and associate professor of pediatrics at Emory University School of Medicine in Atlanta, said there had been a lack of clarity and consensus regarding how much added sugar is safe for children. The result, she said, was that the typical American child consumes about triple the recommended amount of added sugars. There are people who are sugar conscious and stay under the 25 to 40 gram mark regularly, but for the average person, that's not much sugar. A Pop-Tart, just one, not both, and a cup of coffee with a teaspoon of sugar, that's 21 grams. For the rest of the day, you can have one teaspoon of ketchup, 3.8 grams, one tablespoon of salad dressing, 4 grams, or two slices of bread, 3 grams for two slices, but no pasta, 10 grams per serving, and no yogurt, 20 grams per 5-ounce serving for the rest of the day. Drink a 44-ounce big gulp from the gas station, 128 grams of sugar, on Monday, and that's it for sugar until the weekend. Raha said one of the main problems she faces as a dietitian at Crossing is families who consume too much sugar. Fighting sugar is a passion of hers and constant struggle. My goal with my patients is to clearly demonstrate that the amount of sugar they're eating looks like, and also have people to be more mindful and aware of sugar and start looking for it on labels, Raha said. The goal isn't to be perfect, but to be mindful. The thought process should be reduce, reduce, reduce. I really encourage people to keep a food diary of what their children are eating. It's hard enough for adults to make good decisions. How, as adults, can we expect the child to make the right decision? We have to set up an environment to where those options aren't available. Added sugars are any sugars, including table sugar, fructose, and honey, either used in processing and preparing foods or beverages, added to foods at the table, or eaten separately. Starting in July 2018, food manufacturers will be required to list the amount of added sugars on the nutritional facts panel of their products. Until then, the best way to avoid added sugars in your child's diet is to serve mostly foods that are high in nutrition, such as fruits, vegetables, whole grains, low-fat dairy products, lean meat, poultry, and fish, and to limit foods with little nutritional value, Voss said. Raha said, Raha said, those aren't easy changes, but their impact can be great. If you're able to stick to your guns and change your habits and change your family's habits and stay consistent with it, your children are going to be healthier and their children will be healthier, Raha said. You're impacting generations to come by making that decision and sticking with it. Because of the lack of research for or against the routine use of non-nutritive sweeteners such as aspartame, saccharin, and sucralose, in the diets of children, the AHS felt it could not make a recommendation for or against no-calorie sweeteners. There is no research study out there that's conclusive as far as sweeteners, and there are a lot of myths out there, Raha said. I think it's a choice, especially here and there, but it's a good idea to focus on eating foods the way they are intended to be eaten. That's where tracking sugar in the diet can get complicated. Though milk, lactose, and fruit juice, fructose, have sugar, the sugar is naturally occurring, and they come with other health benefits. It's not known whether the high sugar content in 100% fruit juices should cause the same concerns as beverages with added sugars. Juices that have 100% fruit juice are okay because they don't have added sugar, but limit it to 4 ounces, Raha said, because though the fruit juice is natural sugar, there is no fiber to slow it down, and it's still stored as fat. But when you look at milk, chocolate milk has 23 grams of sugar, but there are 12 essential nutrients in milk, so at least it's a healthier trade-off than soda or Kool-Aid. When in doubt, Patel said, drink water. It's important that we stay hydrated, and the more water you drink, the less hungry you are, Patel said. Going on to an article, Warner Hospital gets update. Clinton. When Paul Scowen came to Dr. John Warner Hospital to interview for its CEO job in January 2015, he couldn't figure out where he was supposed to go in. He ended up like many, Scowen said, who aren't from Clinton, standing in the parking lot scratching his head. The wall where the sign is now used to be this big empty wall, Scowen said. I didn't know where to go in, so I went in where everybody who isn't from here goes in, the emergency room. Beginning September 1, Scowen ended the confusion with a new sign that at the same time revealed a new name, Warner Hospital and Health Services. On Thursday, Warner showed off its new sign and renovated admitting and registration area with a tour and health fair. Scowen is from Chicago and has worked in the medical field for 35 years. He said he thought while changing the sign, it would be a good idea to update the hospital's name. It was the only hospital in the state starting with the word doctor, and that sounded very rural. Scowen said, but we're not rural. We're dead center in between Bloomington, Decatur, Lincoln, Springfield, and Champaign. We wanted a name that would help let people know that we're more than just an emergency room and some beds. To change the name, Scowen went to City Hall. Clinton owns the hospital and later through the required state and federal agencies. But first, he went to John Warner IV, the last of the Warners. He owns Warner Farm Management in Clinton, but lives in Rhode Island. I explained that I wanted to change the name, but to keep the Warner name, and he said it was a capital idea. Scowen said I gave him some names to choose from, and he happened to choose the name one, the same one I liked. The former admitting and registration area was, like the lack of a sign on the exterior, not inviting for patients and visitors. You walked in, and there was no desk, just a counter, and some chairs where registration was being done. Warner Risk Manager Heather Schofield said, there were also these interesting purple curtains. Now there's a reception desk and a more separated registration area with tall dividers between each station. We wanted to improve patient confidentiality, and this gives us more space too, Warner Chief Financial Officer Donna Wisner said. Scowen said the old setup was uncomfortable, confusing and slow. Whoops. We expanded it and made patient flow better, and the signage is better so people know where they're going, Scowen said. Wisner said 19 Warner employees made up a focus group to help design the renovation. In addition to the admitting and registration upgrades, the chapel, previously downstairs, has been turned into a reflection room. The chapel has been moved to the second floor, closer to patient rooms. Warner holds a health fair annually, and Scowen said he wanted to combine this year's fair with the open house for the new signage and renovation. There were booths featuring Warner's services and also booths from nearby hospitals and healthcare companies. The hospital was named after Dr. John Warner, who arrived in DeWitt County in 1842 and practiced medicine until 1856. He went into banking and donated money to build a hospital where before his death in 1905. The city took ownership of the hospital in 1909. Continuing with another article entitled Cleanup of Former Internet Wagner Magner Casting Site Has Started. Hater. Cleanup efforts are progressing at the former Intermet Wagner casting site in Decatur, with plans announced Wednesday to develop the area. Viewig Real Estate has been working with the City of Decatur, Greater Decatur Chamber of Commerce, and Illinois Environmental Protection Agency, as it hopes to make the site more presentable and find a new user for the property. It is located east of North Jasper Street and south of Marietta Street, with rail lines to the east and south. The facility has been partially demolished, with only the buildings along Jasper Street standing, along with a couple of smaller buildings north of Sangamon Street. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency joined the efforts last week in assessing an environmental hazards at the 34-acre property, as a cleanup process is beginning that is expected to last another 2 or 3 months. The EPA can spend up to $1.9 million on the project while having 8 contractors on site. We'll have a blank slate by the time we're done, developer Tim Viewig said. We look forward to marketing the property in the future. Before the site can be redeveloped, the EPA is working to remove asbestos capacitors containing polychlorinated biphenyls, PCBs, mercury, chrome dioxide, and other waste that could pose potential risks to human health. The agency is planning to dig up and dispose of contaminated soil, demolish old structures as necessary, dispose of or recycle capacitors, and remove debris from the site, which is zoned for heavy industrial usage. Since the 1880s, the land has been used for electroplating, along with operation of a radiation room, a bulk petroleum plant, several machine shops, and several foundries. Wagner Castings began operating there in 1917. The EPA will be monitoring air quality during the cleanup to protect public health, said Craig Thomas, federal on-scene coordinator with the U.S. EPA. He said information on the project is available, and a final report will be issued when the cleanup is completed. An estimated 3,850 cubic yards of asbestos debris will be removed, along with treating 7,000 square feet of asbestos in one building. The EPA plans to send waste to approved disposal or recycling facilities. Thomas said workers in hazmat suits were on site removing mercury from one of the buildings while a crowd gathered nearby as details of the project were announced. The Illinois EPA became involved with Wagner for remediation efforts at the site in 1997, with Greg Dunn, Voluntary Site Remediation Unit Manager with the IPEA's Bureau of Land. The facility was sold to Intermet Corporation in 2001 before that company filed for bankruptcy in 2004, and the plant closed in late 2005, remaining vacant since then. Efforts to clean the site after it was sold in 2008 to a group of investors called 825 North Lauber LLC and attract a new user never fully materialized. The project to develop a Class A logistics rail served distribution facility was to be privately financed. Nothing has happened at this site since 2010, Dunn said. If the current transformation efforts are successful, revamping the distressed site can lead to economic growth, job creation, revitalization of the surrounding neighborhood, and increase the city's tax base, said Marinda Rothrock, Greater Decatur Chamber of Commerce president. The economic development outlook is changing with the potential for the site to be put in productive use again, Mayor Julie Moore Wolf said. About 1,000 people worked at the plant in 1990, having once been a proud part of Decatur's legacy. The economic development outlook is changing with the potential for the site to be put in productive use again, Mayor Julie Moore Wolf said. About 1,000 people worked at the plant in 1990, having once been a proud part of Decatur's legacy. Going back to where Wagner was here, this was a thriving plant with employees who came to work every day and made a great living, Moore Wolf said. We've got an opportunity to come back to that. This hasn't been much to look at. This is now a phenomenal opportunity for the community. Fewig said about $100,000 has already been spent clearing vegetation just to access what kind of shape the property is in. Weeds had grown through most of the facility and covered most of the parking lot. Trespassers have stripped wires and taken anything of value that could be found, leaving behind broken bottles and broken windows. Utility crews once discovered pit bulls chained to a fence and evidence that they were being made to fight nearby. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated September 16, 2016. Please stay tuned.